90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. This morning we have Allison Phillips with Casey Case, which is a group that stands for Stamping Out Prostitution in Kansas City. Casey Case stands for Kansas City Coalition Against Sexual Exploitation. Good morning, Allison, and welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning, Joseph. Thank you for having me today.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background?
About my background? It came from I had a very exceptional upbringing. I had a wonderful family, supportive parents. I had a dad who loved me very much and instilled this belief in me that I could do whatever I set my mind to. And they provided every opportunity to achieve my dreams. So I grew up thinking that was kind of the norm, and that's how things should be. But and it should, but unfortunately, it's not for most. And as I'm older now, and I have walked out life, I see, particularly with women and young girls, a lot of times what keeps them from living to their full potential is some form of abuse or sexual discrimination, oppression, or just low self-esteem, that are associated with those types of things.
Well, as you're already talking about the mission of Kansas City Case, what led you to working with Kansas City Case?
Well, I wanted to get involved in some area of making a difference. Early on in college, I took some aptitude tests that came up pretty high for getting involved in law enforcement. So I recently went and got a degree in criminal justice and criminology, and wanted to apply my education in that area. So I surveyed the landscape and volunteered with a number of different organizations, and finally landed here.
Why was the Kansas City Coalition Against Prostitution formed?
Okay, so the prostitution working group that we're going to talk about today was formed out of the East Patrol Community Resource Team meetings. And so CRT, Community Resource Team, this is a gathering of community members, law enforcement, and different stakeholders in that East Patrol division of KCPD, that Prospect Corridor. And they gather monthly to discuss issues in the community of all kinds, crime, it's everything from graffiti to gangs and, drug use and things like that. And prostitution was often on the agenda. Prostitution, this is an area of town where street prostitution, where it is a visible element, and so lots of residents and neighborhood leaders and so forth want to do something about it. It was taking up a disproportionate amount of time during those meetings, and so they asked for a separate working group to be convened so that we could really do something more effective.
As a former neighborhood leader in that community that has combated with this situation for the last 12 years, it's something that we've just barely begin to get a hold of, but it seems it's a one thing about it, it's a moving target. Years ago, Truce was the hot spot for prostitution, and as Truce got the community improvement district, the prostitution went to Independence Avenue. As Independence Avenue got this community improvement district, now the prostitution has still, there's still some on Independence Avenue, but now it's beginning to move. Now it's a lot on the Prospect Corridor from the areas of 18th Street up to about 35th Street that you will see different women, you know, engaged in their trade, therefore. And it's one of those things that it brings a lot of different other aspects into a neighborhood and community that are not already there that we have to really begin to work toward if we're going to improve our communities.
Mm-hmm. And there are lots of factors that make it a moving target. Certainly the introduction of the internet within, particularly within the last 10 years, and the way that that drives a lot of prostitution behind closed doors. And so just because we're not necessarily seeing it so much on the streets doesn't mean that it's necessarily getting better.
Why is it important to stop sexual exploitation?
Oh, gosh. There are lots of reasons for that. This is something that whenever I get a chance, I want people to understand that this affects all of us. One section of this, you know, when we talk about the impact of visible street prostitution within a community, it's bad for everybody. It's bad for businesses. It's bad for families. It's very tied to drug trade and gang activity, and so it's bad for communities in general, not just those who are being exploited through it. Those who come into a neighborhood to purchase sex from those who are being prostituted, it has terrible effects on them and their families. And so it's just something, and that's just me just talking about street prostitution. I mean, there's all the other components of it too. So it's something that we should care about for many, many reasons.
What is the average age of those who start in the commercial sex industry? I mean, that it's not, people think that it's something between consenting adults, but the average age is a lot lower than that.
Right. That's a common myth. There are lots of common myths and misperceptions about what prostitution is, and this idea that it's something between consenting adults is truly a myth. There might be some exceptions to that, but the research that I have looked at, and there is plenty of it, will tell you that the average age of entry is somewhere between the ages of 11 and 14. And so oftentimes the adults that we see in prostitution, their exploitation began when they were much younger. So it's really makes it hard to say that this is a choice that someone makes.
What are some of the other common myths about prostitution and those that are being sexually exploited?
Well, there are lots of them. I think probably the number one myth when you talk about prostitution, people say it's the world's oldest profession, right? And that's not true at all. If we call it a profession, we're saying that this is work. This is something that, you know, and when we say profession or work, we talk about something that that requires skills, or that you have education or training for, it implies that there's dignity in your work, that you have a right to expect safety and protection from basic things like harassment, you know, maybe health insurance provision for things like that. And none of that exists in prostitution. Calling prostitution work or sex work or a profession makes about as much sense as calling slavery in the United States 200-300 years ago, you're calling those people agricultural technicians. It's not work at all.
What leads women and children into prostitution?
And boys and men too. It's a very complex issue. When we look at the research of those who are involved in prostitution, overwhelmingly what we see are a layer upon layer of vulnerabilities, abuse. So we're talking people who overwhelmingly come from poverty. They have been most of the time, I've seen statistics that range between 65 and 95% of those who are in prostitution have been sexually abused as children. So those kinds of boundary violations become normative for them and part of their identity, which is not something that any of us should be okay with. And so poverty, racial minorities, gender, and minorities and so forth, all of those types of things point to that these are folks that are marginalized and vulnerable.
How does prostitution promote harmful views about women that can lead to more violence against women in general?
Well, it's quite logical, actually, if you think about it. I mean, if we say that a certain segment of society can be commodified and put up for sale, that doesn't just affect those women, it affects all women. You know, there are a number of studies I looked at where, you know, the women who are sexually assaulted, they're called the same names, you know, or harassed in the workplace. So it has implications for all of us. And, you know, in places where prostitution is legal and accepted, the rates of violence for women in general increase, and that is true for sexual assault, domestic violence. And interestingly, in the United States, prostitution is illegal in all 50 states except for Nevada, where it is legal in certain counties outside of Las Vegas. And guess which state in our country has the highest rates of violence against women in general?
Most likely we would think Nevada.
It's Nevada, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we need to look at is on average, the average lady who's in prostitution gets physically but non-lethally attacked approximately once a month. And I probably, from hearing that, with thinking of what the research I did, I would think that number is very, very low.
Yeah, I can't speak to that number, but there is reams and reams of research. You know, so we talk about another myth related to prostitution, and that's that it's a victimless crime. I even in my studies, you know, in criminal justice, read textbooks that classify prostitution as a victimless crime. But if you look at the facts out there, you see that women in prostitution are, and men and boys and girls are, you know, they're subjected to repeated rape, abuse, torture, even, and murder at rates that are way higher than, you know, the general population. And interestingly, they also have higher rates of PTSD than combat veterans.
As a profession, women who are in prostitution are 18 times more likely to be murdered than women of similar age. Mm-hmm. Those involved in prostitution have a very high level of homicide rate at 204 per 100,000 women. And to put this in contrast, for those in the fishing industry, it is 129 out of every 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. In Kansas City, we've had multiple different situations where women have been killed. Predominantly here, it's more women. We had 6 women with ties to prostitution and drugs on Independence Avenue that were murdered between 1982 and 1994. And in February of 2013, police were looking for a man who had killed at least 2 women, and then a 3rd woman who barely escaped her death, and she was found on Interstate 35.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's definitely not something that is a victimless crime, because mm-hmm. for every crime, there has to be a victim.
Right.
What is the average age of women who are killed who are involved in the prostitution and sexual exploitation?
The one figure that I've looked at is the age of 34, and that's not just that is not just murder. It's the average age of death, and so that accounts for drug overdoses, accidents, suicide is certainly an issue. So this is not something that we want for anyone.
How large of a problem is prostitution and sex exploitation in the Kansas City metropolitan area?
That's a great question. So I've heard a statistic badly misquoted often, and perhaps some of your listeners have heard this too, that Kansas City is number 2 in the nation for sex trafficking. And that's an example of misquoting statistics. There have been a couple studies in which Kansas City was listed among a number of cities in which they were ranked number 2, but it certainly wasn't all cities in the country, so that's probably not an accurate way of describing it. But what I can say about how big the problem is here in Kansas City is, you know, if we think about prostitution, what we're talking about is a basically a supply and demand business. And so if we want to think about how big the problem is, I point to how big is demand. And so in 2013, there was a study done here in Kansas City and other cities in which they posted decoy ads, and they wanted to measure what kind of response rate do decoy ads advertising commercial sex get. And what they found was that 14.5% of the adult male population here in Kansas City are actively responding to ads advertising commercial sex. So that's just one piece of it. Through UMKC, where I am an adjunct instructor and I teach human trafficking and commercial sexual exploitation, we've done some research there. Using police data, we've found that we estimate there are approximately 3,500 adults at any given time in the Kansas City metropolitan area who are being commercially sexually exploited. We did some looking in at review boards where buyers talk to each other and tell each other where to go for illicit massage businesses. These are essentially brothels. There's 79, at least 79, according to these sites. I'm sure there are more that we didn't find in the metro area. And we've also taken some time to ask agencies that work with minor victims of commercial sexual exploitation. And in every single case, the agency's numbers are increasing. And I think that's a function of we're getting better at identifying victims of this, but also that perhaps that the problem is increasing.
A little bit more about the survey that you mentioned. The 2013 study by Arizona State University found that more men in Kansas City, almost, as you said, 14.5% of men in Kansas City over the age of 18, that's almost 100,000 men, had purchased sex via the Internet. This was more than in Chicago, Phoenix, and even Las Vegas. Kansas City ranked second in that survey.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we're going to go, as you were talking about the police department, in 2016, arrests in Kansas City for solicitation were 142 for patronizing, 152 for promoting, 5 for human trafficking, and for human trafficking, and then there was another 8 that was also associated with that. Is this the real number, or is the number way more than this?
I think it's way more than that. This is just the part that we see in numbers, but it's I assure you it's bigger. So.
Sexual exploitation is a supply and demand industry, and many only want to blame the women who are out there who are involved. But if there wasn't a demand from the male aspect, but the men in most cases are not charged, they're only the women are charged. You know, would changing laws help that situation where they would charge both parties possibly?
I think that would help, but I also think shifting our public perception of how we view prostitution towards a more evidence-based, informed, trauma-informed way. So if we could look past some of these myths, you know, that we've talked about, and understand what prostitution is, it's a way in which our society's most marginalized and vulnerable are oppressed, and continue to be marginalized further. So I think that would help in if we could see that. I mean, you know, I work with a number of agencies who work with people who are being exploited through prostitution, and we could rally all of the resources in the world and do everything to help these people get out of that life and those situations. But if we never do anything, but as long as there are still people out there offering money for this, the problem will persist. So we really have to go at both sides of this. And
if you have a question for Allison, give us a call on our studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. Another fact for you, in the United States, prostitutes get busted more often than their clients, and those that are managed them by a huge margin. Every year in the United States, between 70,000 and 80,000 women are arrested for prostitution, costing taxpayers approximately $200 million. The breakdown of the rest is as follows. 70% of the time, the female prostitutes and their managers are busted. 20% of the time, it's male prostitutes and their managers. And 10% is just the clients of the Johns. This equates to 9 prostitutes being arrested for every one of their clients and customers. So, you know, the laws in this case more are going after the women than they are going after the men, but it's a supply and demand industry, so if the demand wasn't there, then maybe the women wouldn't be there. What can be done to address those that purchase the services? What changes in the law, maybe stiffer penalties, would that really have a more of an impact on demand?
Well, some good news that I'm happy to say is that KCPD in the area where our working group is formed their arrest rates are about 50-50. So that we can see that there's some progress being made there. But when I look at the research that's been done on buyers of commercial sex, what they say will deter their behavior are 3 main things. And one is for ease of access to be reduced, for just not to be such an easy, convenient thing to do. It would be having their behavior somehow found out by perhaps family, a wife, employers. That would deter them. And then the other thing, too, is facing a fine of $1,000 or more and facing some sort of jail time. And the fact is that most of the time it's, and I think this just kind of goes back to old cultural norms and myths about prostitution. Is just kind of seen as, you know, almost a joke. I mean, if you look at some of the movies, you know, buying a prostitute is a funny thing, and boys will be boys, but it really perpetuates a very harmful thing, and needs to be seen as something serious. So we advocate for holding buyers accountable for what they do, and there are many reasons for their benefit to do that.
How does prostitution impact families? You know, other than just putting the health of the husband and the boyfriend and their partners at risk, what are some of the other factors that impact that family?
You mean from like the buyer perspective?
From the buyer perspective.
Oh, it's devastating. I have multiple friends who, when the discovery was made that their husband was addicted and looking at pornography. I mean, that's infidelity. That's or in even purchasing sex from it's a devastating thing for a family. It rips a family apart. So I think traditionally there people express concerns. Well, it spreads STDs, and yeah, that's true. But it's the effect of it is much bigger than that. And I, you know, just a personal story. A family member of mine recently, he was a severe alcoholic his whole life, and when his body was found in a cheap motel recently in January, and he basically drank himself to death. But one thing that was found once his belongings were returned to my aunt was that he had a lot of pornography on his phone, and there was evidence that he had been purchasing sex, that he was a John, a buyer. And I believe that that was part of what killed him too. You know, it kept him from having a meaningful relationship with a woman, which could have helped him with his other, with his drinking. And I think it kept him alone. I think it kept him in shame. And so I want better for people.
It seems in our community, warm weather increases prostitution. Is prostitution a seasonal thing that is dependent on the weather, or is it a year-round situation?
It's a year-round situation. I think it might look like it gets worse, when the weather comes out, because we see it then. But just because it's behind closed doors doesn't mean it's not happening. And it doesn't mean it's not a problem and that we shouldn't care about it.
Are there places or areas in communities where you may see more prostitution activity?
The internet is a big one, and that's everywhere. That's huge. And even, you know, with the recent shutdown of Backpage, which is one of the, you know, nation's largest facilitators of commercial sex in the country, I think 70% of prostitution occurred through that website. You know, it's still going on. It's just different sites and different. It's harder to find. So yeah, I would say the internet is probably the biggest facilitator of it. But when we talk about street prostitution, you know, we're talking about usually, you know, more difficult crime-ridden neighborhoods where that type of thing is.
So higher crime leads to the possibility of more prostitution in that area?
Possibly, yeah, because there's, you know, connections with the drug trade and all of these things go together.
And
so,
that was my next question. That was one of the things that our community mm-hmm. battled as we saw the prostitution. We also saw more drug activity, illicit drug activity.
Exactly.
So we had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So when we fight prostitution in the Prospect Corridor, we are also fighting these other things too, and we're giving businesses in that area an opportunity to, you know, to do well and to thrive, and other businesses to come in. We're making the place safer for the children that live in that community, and giving them better opportunities. And so it's. There are just a lot of things that go along with it. There's a ripple effect.
We have a caller. Caller, can you tell us your name and what part of Kansas City you're calling from?
My name's Gary. I'm from Mission, Kansas.
Yes, Gary. What's your question or comment?
I'd like to know if she has done any research on the areas that there are legal prostitution, such as Nevada or even in Holland. In Denmark areas. Curious if there's a deviance in that type of legal prostitution.
I'm glad you asked that question, because I wanted to make sure that we talked about, you know, what is the effect of legalizing prostitution. And I haven't personally done any research, but I can tell you that the research that I've looked at is whenever and wherever prostitution is made legal, the problem gets worse. And because now we've sent out social signals and changed the culture that, you know, and said that this kind of behavior is okay. When we legalize prostitution, we also invite a lot of illegal prostitution, and you are now turning folks who were previously criminals or involved in criminal organizations. Now we've turned them into legitimate businessmen, and you know, all of these things that are promised that come along with legalization. Well, it'll be safer for the women, and they can have rights and so forth. Those things are never realized in reality, and so it really does make the problem bigger. It makes it worse, and it's not something that Casey Case or any organization that I work with would ever advocate for.
Thank you, Gary, for your call. Mm-hmm. So, give us a call if you've got a question for Allison. Our number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. There was a comment, or there was an idea looked at in Kansas City about making certain parts of Kansas City open and taxing the women, but it seems like that would be more giving into the problem instead of addressing the problem.
Absolutely. You know, we talk about supply and demand. Now we've increased demand by doing that. And so whenever legal prostitution, you know, think about the state of Nevada, there's plenty of illegal prostitution that occurs in the state of Nevada. I teach a class on human trafficking at UMKC, and I pulled some of my students and I asked them, I said, raise your hand, is prostitution legal or illegal in Las Vegas? And most of them thought it was legal, but it's not.
Only in two counties. Outside of Clark County.
Outside of it.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere outside of Clark County, where the famous Mustang mm-hmm. Ranch is, and then some areas up there around Reno. That's about it.
Yeah. So in Australia, prostitution is legal in some areas, and the net effect of doing that was that human trafficking into the country of Australia, I mean, for the purpose of prostitution, whether it was legal or illegal, increased by 300%. So it's not something that that we want. It doesn't make it better.
We have to take a short break. So you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's only community radio station. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And our guest today is Allison with Casey Case. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
The Hidden Life of Trees on Sprouts, Thursday at noon.
This week in the Thursday night special, we'll have a panel give their take on white supremacy. First, we'll listen to a white nationalist point of view. Then, pastors Greg Ely and Dennis Solis, along with Keith Washburn, will offer their rebuttal. That's this Thursday at 7 p.m. right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI.
We're back. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson, and we're having a discussion today with Allison of Casey Case, which is an organization that's designed to looking at reducing prostitution in the Kansas City, Missouri area. So, how has the internet changed sex trafficking?
Well, it's it's driven a lot of it behind closed doors. It's created an avenue for traffickers or pimps to reach vulnerable children in ways that are unprecedented. It's enormous transformation. So, one thing I wanted to say earlier, we were talking about the net effect of arrest, traditional ways of dealing with prostitution in our policing is when a prostituted person, usually a woman is arrested, I want the taxpayer to understand what they are getting for their money when that happens. The underlying reasons for a person's involvement in prostitution are very complex, and I have not ever heard that that an arrest and a criminal record is something that helps exit a person's life from a person into a better life from this. I think if the taxpayer could understand what they get from their money when a person is arrested for prostitution, I think they would start getting upset about it. What's most effective in fighting this is when we start looking at the demand side of it.
So we've got a caller. Caller, I guess we lost you. Give us a call back. So why was the prostitution working group formed right around the Prospect Quarter area?
Well, like I mentioned a little earlier, it came out of the community resource team meetings that are held there to address crime in the Prospect Quarter, and it was basically, the issue of prostitution was not, it's not going to be solved in a 10-minute segment from those meetings. It really needs a very intentional strategy. And so by forming this separate working group, we're able to bring stakeholders from different sectors, social service organizations, people who in anti-trafficking groups come and help. We're getting law enforcement to the table, prosecutors, community organizations, and so forth.
We've got a caller. Can you tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from and what's your question or comment?
Yeah, this is Jack from Shawnee.
Yes, Jack. What's your question or comment for Allison?
Good morning. Good show. Prostitution is the oldest profession. It's not going anywhere. It seems to me the best thing to do is regulate it and tax it. If it's between consenting adults and in a professional environment, it seems to me that it should be okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that is also...
Thank you for your call.
Basically another myth there, and we're Joseph and I are going to start talking about that. There actually are prostitution is entirely a preventable crime, and there actually are things, models for dealing with it that do work. And so some examples of that are in Sweden, they were the first country to implement a thing called the Nordic model. And what the Nordic model does is it makes prostitution legal for the prostituted person, but it's still illegal for to purchase sex or to traffic it or you know pimp or pay. Procure. So it shifts the focus of the criminal justice system onto those who perpetuate it and exploit people, and it connects those people who are being prostituted with the services that they need to exit. So it and the net effect of that in Sweden within the first 2 years is that they experienced a 50% decline in visible street prostitution. And it didn't just drive it all underground. I mean, there was some of that, but there the number of ads that were out there declined significantly. And most telling of all was that the immigrant officials within outside of the country noticed a 1,000% decrease in immigration of human trafficking across their borders compared to other countries. So it is something that does work, and there are other countries who have implemented that model and seen similar results.
Is prostitution a crime that affects only cities, or does it impact suburban areas also?
It affects suburban areas too, in rural areas. Yes, absolutely.
So do you fight prostitution the same way in a suburban area that you would do maybe in an urban core area of a city?
No, I would not say that. The strategy, you know, I would advocate for the Nordic model as a philosophy wherever we go. But what that looks like is really going to depend on the landscape, and it's going to look at, you know, what is going on in terms of commercial sexual exploitation within a community. You know, are there truck stops, you know, strip clubs, things like that, you know.
Does Casey Case work just in Missouri? Does it work also across the state lines in Kansas?
We also work in Kansas across the state lines. Our coalition is formed and designed to, you know, basically we're trying to target the Kansas City metropolitan area and create, by joining different organizations and different sectors of our community, we hope to create a model city.
We have a caller. Can you tell us your name? What's your question?
Hello, can you hear me? You're barely audible to me.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay.
I would be curious to know what this lady's take is on legalization of marijuana, and it's parallel to what she's talking about here, or legalization of other kinds of drugs. Seems to me that there is a demand for those things that isn't going to go away.
Well, boy, I didn't come to talk about that much, but my feeling is, and this is, you know, my feeling with legalizing prostitution, I think we can clearly see that making it illegal the way that it is in the United States, particularly because the focus of the law tends to be on the prostituted person, is not working. But that doesn't mean that we should do the opposite. There are models for and go out and legalize it. And, you know, there are models for doing it in a way that is smarter. And helps people that need help. And so I, you know, I think that same philosophy could be applied there too.
Yes, we have a caller. Caller, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from and what your question or comment is for Allison?
Yes, my name's Kurt from the East Side. And I'd like to broaden the conversation. It seems like I understand that you're exploiting women, but it seems like there's a lot of, you know, saying bad things, you know, people are bad or something. But I was just wondering if you broaden it and say, would you support like a $15 minimum wage so that people could earn money legally and pay all their bills and just work 40 hours a week?
Oh, at a you know a good job, yes, I would be in favor of that. Yeah,
exactly. $15 minimum wage for everybody.
You know, one of the one of the most well-known researchers on the issue of prostitution, her name is Melissa Farley, and one of the number one things that she advocates for, if people want to eradicate commercial sexual exploitation, is a safe and affordable housing for people who need that. So,
excellent.
You know, because what are we talking about? A lot of the times we're talking about vulnerabilities that drive people to desperation, and this is the outcome.
I was wondering if you could, you know, you probably can't talk about this on the air, although it's wonderful you have enough time to devote to this, but is there some type of web resource that you would recommend to teach people how to have healthy sexual relationships?
Well, there are lots of resources on that, and I'm glad you asked. Maybe Joseph and I can get together at the end, and we'll put some things together for your site.
Okay. It amazes me that, you know, when I call in or ask a speaker to talk about this, but, I mean, this is part of the public record. There's former Health and Human Services director, part of the president's cabinet, Joyce Lynn Elders. She recommended that we teach young people how to have healthy masturbation. And I hope this you have something to say about that. And have a good day.
Okay.
Thank you for your question, Kurt, and comments. So I think that's one that definitely is, I think that's one that you have to sit down and have a family conversation with about that. That's not one that we definitely want to, that's, because each community, each family is different, so I think that's definitely a family situation on that one. So how does prostitution impact businesses? I know we were talking earlier, truck stops and different things that may make it more, but how does it impact businesses that are actually viable in the community, hardworking, that are just trying to, you know, a small business owner trying to make out a living day to day?
Well, specifically when we talk about what our working group is trying to do in the Prospect Corridor, we had the last month there were two teams that went out and went and talked to business owners in that neighborhood about specifically about prostitution, and the general response that they got from, you know, from the business owners was very positive. They wanted to do something about it, but they didn't know what. And they were really happy that the outreach teams came and talked to them. You know, they said things like, yeah, I hate it. I hate that this is going on. I don't like to see the women being treated like this. I have a family myself in this community, and I'm trying to run a business, and I want something better. And they, calling the police doesn't always feel like the best option. And so they were really happy to have our outreach teams come in and offer, you know, numbers for resources and advocates and folks who want to help and provide other healthy options for those who are being exploited.
So I know, when does the working group meet? And how often do they meet?
We meet monthly at 10 a.m. at KCPD's East Patrol Station in the community room. Our meetings are open to any community residents in that Prospect Corridor, you know, that lives within the East Patrol Division of KCPD. And, you know, community members, concerned citizens, social service workers, business owners, we really want the community to come together, because we feel like the solution to this, there is no silver bullet solution. I've had lots of arguments with people over the years, of, well, if we did this or if we did that, and they get, you know, these what I call chicken or egg arguments. And really, it's all of us doing, you know, our part. And that's what we're trying to talk about in our working group, is what can we as a community do?
It's going to take the community to get engaged to solve this problem. It's just not a problem that can be solved in vacuum. And for those that are wondering how large East Patrol is, East Patrol goes from Wabash to the Lee Summit border. So it's a huge area. Mm-hmm. And just because prostitution may not be in your area right now doesn't mean that it, as we said earlier, it's a moving target. Doesn't mean that it can't come there. You know, it goes all the way to the Missouri River right there off of Front Street, so that's a huge area. And as you mentioned earlier, places where you have truck stops, where you have businesses, where you have transient individuals, are huge areas for prostitution. One of the articles I read when I was doing research for this, when they were saying that sporting events, like when Kansas City went to the World Series, when we have the Super Bowl game, when we have the, you know, football games on Sunday, if we get to the Super Bowl, those type of events draw more people into prostitution, because there are some people there that are just there to ply their trade, mm-hmm. and to make the money. Mm-hmm. So we've had another one of our guests join us, which is Mr. Ryan Finley, former 3rd District City Councilman, but he is also the Central City 1/8 cent sales tax committee. Good morning, Mr. Finley. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So as we're talking about prostitution, we're the 1/8 cent sales tax, Central City Economic Development Tax, goes from 9th Street all the way out to Gregory Boulevard, from Paseo over to Indiana, which is right along that corridor where we are trying to look at also working with prostitution. How important is it to be able to get things to a better state to bring economic activity and development into that community area?
Well, it's terribly important, Joe, because anything we can do positive for the community in the area that we're talking about, which has been neglected, will make a difference. Now, if we can invest in more positive business activity, that'll make a difference. If we can invest in more positive activities for youth, that'll make a difference. The parameters of the use of the sales tax right now, we're still working on some of the policies. We, as you know, we've got some of them narrowed down. And we're going to start taking applications for various things that people would like to offer us on ideas for things that will help the community and will help the general category of economic development. We'll start those applications, the first round of them, on June 1st.
And I know that's going to be, we're going to bring you on for a future show in the next couple of weeks. We're looking at the first week of June, right as the applications come out, to discuss more about this. But are there any other things that you're working on right now that would actually that would help the community, and things that you maybe personally want to speak about at this point?
Well, thank you very much. I would like to mention also that our Public Improvement Advisory Commission, which I'm also a member of, is accepting applications for capital improvement projects under our Public Improvement Advisory Tax. Now, that tax was recently renewed, okay, in our third district where I'm appointed as a representative. We'll have $4.120 million to spend on sidewalks, curbs, street improvements, park improvements, various things. Now, those applications are available. If anybody sees me, I got some with me, but they're available online and at the city hall. And also, the deadline for getting those in so that your neighborhood activities can be considered is August 31st. Okay? And if it's not in by August 31st, you know, you'll be out of this year's consideration. We've got public hearings coming up on July 24th and July 27th at the Greg Kleiss Center and at the East Patrol Station. So if your neighborhood wants to submit an application, they can submit an application and then come and support your application at our third district hearings. Now, that is going on, and there's a lot of things going on, as you well know. I'm a candidate for office. I'm a candidate for the second legislative district seat in the Jackson County Legislature. And I want to get my message out to people in a fair way and an open way about what I have done, how I have served before, and how I feel definitely that our county needs experienced representation right now in light of the fact of what's been going on in Jackson County. You know, and I think that it's a critical time to have our government improved and to have it have more representation of the people of our district.
One of the things we always do in Cowtown Conversations is we try to keep the community informed and educated. And we, anytime we have a candidacy that's impacting one of our areas, we're going to have a candidate forum. So that's going to be one of our July shows. We're going to have the candidates here to talk about that. So I thank Mr. Finley for dropping in today, because we're going to, in 2 weeks, tune in, and we're going to be talking about the 1-8 cent sales tax and how it will improve our community. But then in the month of July, we're going to have a forum and we're going to, on air, where you can call and ask questions for all the candidates. So thank you, Mr. Finley, for dropping in, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks on June the 4th to talk about the 1-8 cent sales tax for the Central City Economic Development Redevelopment Program.
Thank you very much, Joe, and the primary is August 7th. Thank you.
Thank you. So as we begin to round up and close out, Allison, we've got the prostitution working group. We know where it's at. Mm-hmm. We know the area. We know the problem that it's a mobile problem. Mm-hmm. Are you all planning any events to be able to inform the community, educate the community, and bring the community in? And if so, can you talk about those?
Yes. So Saturday, May 19th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., we are having a community engagement event at Good Samaritan Christian Center, which is located at 2100 Prospect Avenue. And the purpose of this event is to just help bring the community together to help them understand how we together can effectively address prostitution. We really want the community just to start looking deeper into the complex reasons that a person is involved in prostitution and start to see it as a demand-driven problem. And community members can help in just the very way that they call and report and file complaints about it. We should not be tolerating semi-truck drivers who come out, you know, they've set up their date on their phone and they come into the Prospect Corridor for a car date. And exploit the people who are vulnerable within that community. That's not okay, and that's not something that we should tolerate. And when we complain to community leaders and to our law enforcement, we should center our complaint that way. Not on, you know, a symptom of the problem. We're topics that we're going to cover in this event are just helping to understand trauma and these complex reasons why someone is involved in prostitution and how, you know, to give you some practical tools for how to respond to situations that you might see or be encountered with and so unpack some of these myths that we've talked about today just to help people understand the truth about prostitution and what solutions actually work. And we're even going to have a small panel of folks, some of whom are survivors of prostitution, even in that area, and they're going to talk about their experiences and what it was that would have helped them.
And so this is going to be Saturday, mm-hmm. May the 19th. Mm-hmm. But before that Saturday, May the 19th, your next working group is going to be what date?
It will be Wednesday the 16th, so we'll meet at East Patrol.
East Patrol at 10 o'clock from 10 a.m. to 11:15, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So that's open to community leaders, those that live in the community, reside in the community, those that are being impacted by prostitution and want to know how they can begin to work to remove prostitution. And I can tell you, as a neighborhood leader, it took 2 years plus in one area for us to move it, mm-hmm. and but it's not something once you move it, you still have to constantly keep watching out for it.
Yeah.
So as we begin to wind down, there are some other resources other than Casey Case, Veronica's Voice, which is one, so if somebody's right. looking for one on the Internet, mm-hmm. and you can, for those that may be being sexually exploited, you can contact Veronica's Voice, and they're online. It's veronicasvoice.org, and the phone number for Veronica's Voice is 816-483-7101. Also, Missouri has a human trafficking task force, and their tip line is 1-844-487-0492. And also, there's a national human trafficking hotline, 1-888-373-7888, or you can text to 233-733. So these are all good resources for those, but come out to, you know, you want people to come out to your event.
Yes.
To be informed, to get educated, mm-hmm. to know how they can begin to help improve their communities and reduce prostitution in their communities.
That's right. Yes, that's our goal. We want to, our overall strategy is to help provide alternatives and increase resource connectivity for those who are being exploited, and we also want to prevent and disrupt and deter those who are exploiting.
You forgot the most important thing, though.
What?
How do they sign up, and what's the free enticement?
Yes. If you don't register in advance, you can, we won't have lunch for you. So this is a free event. We are providing lunch for free, but you have to register in order to get lunch, because if we don't have your registration, we don't know how many lunches to order. So, yes, please register in advance for this.
So where do they go to register?
We have an Eventbrite link on your website that folks can register at. So.
We never end Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. Urban Neighborhood Initiative, UNI, is partnering with the Junior League of Kansas City, Missouri, Burns & McDonald, KCPD, and U.S. Foods to present the Spring Fling and Fitness Fair on Saturday, May 12th from noon to 3 at the Kansas City Neighborhood Academy, 1619 East 24th Street. There will be giveaways of children's bikes and helmets, barbecue games, music, a bounce house, fitness demonstrations, and much more. And Arvis Bank would like to invite you to the second 2018 Small Business Workshop workshop series sponsored by Prospect Business Association. The second series is Barring Fundamentals, takes place on Tuesday, May 15th at 5:15 at East Patrol Community Room. For more information, contact Angela Lois at Arvis Bank at 913-279-3357. And the next prostitution working group will be next Wednesday, May the 16th, at 10 a.m. at East Patrol. And the event, the Prostituting Working Group Coalition Against Sexual Exploitation, will be Saturday, May 19th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Good Samaritan Church of 2100. So come out, and you can find a lot more, and you can talk with Allison about different things. So for Cowtown Conversations, this has been your host, Joseph Jackson. Tune in next week, and our guest will be Kansas City Public Schools Strategic 7 Partnership, and we'll be talking about summer enrichment. And after that week, we're going to be talking about the opioid abuse with one of our resident experts here in Kansas City, Dr. Doug Burris of Truman Medical Center. So for Cowtown Conversations, have a great day. Stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.